The fever came in the night, with the kind of quiet that makes a mother wake before anything changes. Ilse was lying on the pallet beside Alara's bed, wrapped in the thin wool blanket her uncle had woven before the winter took him, when she felt at the heat radiating from the small body beside her, hotter than any morning fire, hotter than the earth in high summer. She opened her eyes. The cottage was dark. The fire had burned down to coals, glowing faint orange beneath the ashes. Alara's breathing was shallow, rapid, each inhalation a thin whistling sound that didn't belong to a healthy child. Ilse sat up. She reached out and pressed her palm to Alara's forehead. The skin was dry and burning. The girl's lips were cracked. Her cheeks were flushed a deep, unnatural red. Alara's eyes fluttered open green, usually bright with questions about sparrows and ditches, and whether the sea was really as wide as the world now glassy and unfocused. "Mama," she whispered. Her voice was raw, scraped thin by fever. "I'm hot." "I know, love," Ilse said. She kept her voice level. Calm, the way her mother used to speak to her when she was small and frightened by thunder. "You're burning up. I'm going to get you cool." She stood. She moved to the wash basin. She dipped a cloth in the cold water from the bucket by the door and wrung it out. She returned to the bed and pressed the cloth to Alara's forehead. The girl flinched, then leaned into it, her eyes closing again. Ilse stayed kneeling beside the bed, watching her daughter's face. The fever was bad. Worse than the cough Alara had caught in autumn, the one that had kept her in bed for 3 days and responded to willow bark and honey. This was different. This was deeper. Ilse had seen fevers like this before in the village, in the winter of the Great Sickness, when half the children in Marrow's Ford had burned for a week and three of them hadn't come out the other side. She had been 17. She had watched her neighbors carry the dead out on their backs. She had not caught it. She had been lucky, or careful, or both. Alara's breathing grew worse. The whistling deepened into a rattle. Her small hands gripped the blanket, knuckles white. Ilse leaned closer. She could smell it, the sour, metallic tang of high fever, the kind that made the air around a sickbed feel thick and heavy. She stood up abruptly. She moved to the door. Her hand went to the bolt. She stopped. The Pilgrim's Road was not to be walked at night. Not anymore. Not since the silence had started following travelers. Not since Jaren had come bruised and bleeding, speaking of something that moved through the dark like water through a crack in stone. Her uncle had known this. He had turned people away. He had kept the road closed for 7 years because the road was supposed to be closed. Because the things that lived in the north did not cross the stones. The stones held the line. Without the stones, or with fewer of them, with the second one shattered into splinters and chips, the line was weakening. Ilse had felt it in the tremor through the rock. She had felt it in the fraying hum. If she walked the road now in the dark, with the fever in her blood and fear in her throat, she might not come back. Jaren had walked it once. He had barely survived. He was still inside the cottage, asleep by the hearth, his staff leaning against the wall, his face scarred and drawn. She could wake him. She could ask him to go. But Jaren was a stranger. He had come seeking passage north, and she had given him shelter. And now he was part of the household in the way that strangers become when the fire is shared and the bread is broken. He was not family. He was not obligated. And he had told her, in the flat, exhausted voice of someone who had walked too far for too long, that the road at night was not safe for anyone who had not been born in the hollow. Ilse stood by the door with her hand on the bolt and listened to Alara's rattling breath. She listened to the hum of the stones outside, low and fraying, like a thread pulled loose from woven cloth. She listened to the wind moving through the bramble at the edge of the yard. Then she took her hand off the bolt. She went to the cupboard. She opened it. Inside were dried herbs, sage, yarrow, mint, chamomile hung in bundles from the rafters during the autumn when her uncle had been well enough to gather them. She had not lit a fire in this cupboard in months. The herbs were brittle and gray. She pulled down the yarrow and the willow bark, her fingers brushing the rough cloth sacks her uncle had stored them in. She pulled down a jar of honey, sealed with wax, still good. She pulled down the tincture bottle valerian root, steeped in vinegar, the kind her mother had taught her to make. The liquid was dark brown and smelled sharp and bitter. She carried everything to the table. She set it down. She looked at Alara. The girl was shivering now, her teeth chattering softly, her body convulsing with the internal war of fever and immune response. Ilse had learned from watching the village healer in Marrow's Ford the old woman with the crooked thumb and the voice like grinding stones that fever was the body's way of fighting something. The trick was keeping the patient alive while the fight happened. Cool cloths, water, willow bark for the pain, honey to soothe the throat, valerian to calm the spirit, and thyme. Thyme was the hardest ingredient. Most people didn't have enough of it. Ilse mixed the tincture with water in a cup. She added honey. She returned to the bed and lifted Alara's head with one arm, pressing the cup to her lips. "Drink," she said softly, "just a little." Alara swallowed. She coughed. Some of the liquid ran down her chin. Ilse wiped it away with the back of her hand. She set the cup down. She pressed the cool cloth to Alara's forehead again. The girl's eyes opened. They were very green, very clear, despite the fever. She looked at her mother with an honesty that cut through the heat and confusion. "Mama," she said, "am I going to die?" Ilse felt something crack in her chest. She kept her face still. "No," she said, "you're not going to die. But the fever is bad." "Yes. Is it the silence?" Ilse froze. She had not told Alara about the silence. She had not spoken of it in the cottage, not since Jaren arrived, not since the stones began to hum with a sound that was fraying. Children heard things. They heard what adults thought they had kept hidden. They heard the stones. They heard the wind. They heard the things that adults called wind but were not wind. "How do you know about the silence?" Ilse asked. Her voice was quiet, careful. Alara shrugged. It was a small movement constrained by fever. "I hear it sometimes, when Mama thinks I'm asleep. It's in the road, it's in the stones, it's waiting." Ilse looked at her daughter. She looked at the small, fragile face, flushed with fever, eyes too old for 8 years. She reached out and touched Alara's cheek. The skin was burning. "It's not waiting for you," Ilse said. "It's waiting for me." Alara nodded, as if this made perfect sense, as if she had been thinking the same thing. "Then you have to go to the road," she said. "You have to fix the stones." "Not tonight," Ilse said. "Tonight you need medicine. Tonight I need to find medicine." Alara's eyes drifted closed. Her breathing slowed just slightly. The rattling softened. The fever had not broken. Ilse could feel the heat radiating from the small body, but for a moment, the worst of it passed. Ilse stood. She moved to the table. She gathered the herbs and the tincture and the cup. She looked at the door. She looked at Jaren's staff by the wall. She looked at the ledger, open on the table, her own handwriting filling the margins. She made her decision. She went to Jaren. He was asleep on the pallet by the hearth, wrapped in a blanket, his face turned toward the dying embers. His breathing was deep and even. She shook his shoulder. He woke instantly. No grogginess, no confusion, just awareness, sharp and immediate, the kind of alertness that came from living in constant danger. His dark eyes focused on her face. "She's burning," Ilse said. "I need medicine. The willow bark isn't enough. I need the healer from Marrow's Ford." Jaren sat up. He rubbed his face with one hand. He looked at the door. He looked at Ilse. "At night." "At night." "The road is worse at night." "I know." "You shouldn't go alone." "I know that too." Jaren was silent for a long moment. He listened to Alara's breathing through the cottage. He listened to the hum of the stones outside. He listened to the wind. "There's a healer in Marrow's Ford," he said finally. "An old woman, Crooked Thumb. She knows the herbs, she knows the fevers, she'll help you." "Do you know the way?" "I walked it 7 years ago." Before the silence got bad, he paused. "It's 6 miles, maybe seven, through the hollow, past the second waystone. The broken one, the one Torvin had shattered." Jaren saw her expression, he nodded. "I'll go with you." "No," Ilse's answer was immediate. "You stay here, with her. If something happens, if the fever takes her, I need you to keep her cool, to keep her drinking, to keep her alive until I come back." Jaren opened his mouth to argue. Ilse cut him off. "This is my daughter," Ilse said. Her voice did not rise. It did not need to. She turned toward the door, her hand finding the bolt before she finished speaking. "I walk it." Jaren looked at her for a long time, then he nodded. He reached for the blanket and pulled it tighter around his shoulders. "Come back," he said. His voice was flat, precise, lacking fear but not lacking worry. "Come back." "I will." Ilse went to the door. She drew the bolt. She opened it. The night was cold. The air smelled of frost and damp earth and something else, something faint and metallic, like the taste of iron on the tongue. The hollow was dark. The stars were hidden behind thick cloud. The pilgrim's road stretched northward, invisible except for the faint outline of stones at the edge of vision. The second waystone was a shapeless lump in the dark. The third was a taller shadow. The fourth further north, near the crest of the hollow, was barely visible at all. Il stepped outside. The cold hit her like a slap. She pulled her cloak tight. She lit the lantern from the last ember in the hearth, cupping the flame with her hand as she stepped over the threshold. The lantern cast a weak, wavering light, barely enough to illuminate the stones at her feet. She began to walk. The road was uneven, cracked, and overgrown with bramble and thistle. Her boots found purchase on the loose stones, avoiding the deeper cracks where the earth had sunk. She walked slowly, carefully, the lantern held low. The hum of the stones was louder at night. It vibrated in her chest, in her teeth, in the hollow of her skull. It was a sound like wind through a flute, low and mournful and frayed at the edges. The second stone, the broken one, hummed differently. Its sound was jagged, discordant, like a string snapped mid-note. Ilse walked past it. She did not look back. The hollow opened around her. The trees on either side of the road were bare, their branches skeletal against the dark sky. The wind moved through them, making a sound like whispering voices. Ilse kept her eyes on the lantern light. She kept her breathing steady. She counted her steps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. She had walked this road before. Not alone. Not at night. Not with a fever in her blood and terror in her throat. But she had walked it. She had played on it as a child, chasing sheep, kicking stones, laughing while her mother called her back from the edge of the northern slope. She had known it then as a place of ordinary life, of dirt and wheat and the sound of birds. Now it was a place of thresholds, of boundaries, of things that crossed and things that did not. Marrow's Ford was downstream from the hollow, past the third waystone, past the point where the pilgrim's road descended into the valley proper. Ilse had been there once, as a girl, when her mother had taken her to buy salt and thread. She remembered the river wide and brown, moving slow and heavy. She remembered the bridge, wooden and sagging in the middle. She remembered the village, clustered around a stone church with a crooked steeple. She remembered the healer's cottage, small and low, with a garden of dried herbs growing in neat rows behind it. She had not been back in 7 years. The walk took her an hour, maybe more. The darkness was absolute beyond the lantern's reach. She could not see her own hand in front of her face. She could only see the circle of light at her feet, the stones beneath her boots, the occasional flash of moonlight through a break in the clouds. The hum of the stones faded as she moved away from them, replaced by the sound of her own breathing and the rustle of bramble against her cloak. She passed the third waystone. It hummed, but its sound was stronger than the second, still frayed, but intact, still holding the line. She pressed her palm to it as she passed, feeling the cold through her glove, feeling the vibration. Solid, patient, she whispered something she did not name, a prayer, a promise, a plea. The fourth waystone was further on, near the crest of the hollow. She did not touch it. She did not have time. The valley opened below her. The lights of Marrow's Ford were visible in the distance, faint, scattered, like stars fallen to earth. She could see the river, a dark ribbon reflecting the moonlight. She could see the bridge. She could see the church steeple, crooked as she remembered. She walked down the slope. The road narrowed, becoming a track, becoming a path, becoming nothing at all. She navigated by memory and lantern light, stepping over roots and stones and patches of ice. The cold was biting now, seeping through her boots, numbing her toes. Her fingers were stiff around the lantern handle. Her breath plumed in front of her face in white clouds. Marrow's Ford was closer than she remembered. Or she was slower. The village emerged from the darker cluster of low stone houses, a church, a well, a blacksmith's forge, all huddled together against the cold and the night. Most of the windows were dark. A few glowed faintly with lamplight. She could see a dog moving between houses, its silhouette against the dim windows. She could hear a cow lowing in a distant field. She found the healer's cottage easily. It was the smallest house in the village, nestled against the riverbank, with a garden of dried herbs growing in neat rows behind it, even in winter, even now. The door was painted green, peeling and cracked, but solid. Ilse knocked. Once, twice, three times. Silence. She knocked again, harder. Please, she said. Please, I need help. A light appeared in the window, then footsteps. then the sound of a latch being drawn. The door opened a crack. An old woman's face appeared in the gap lined, weathered, eyes dark and sharp in the lamplight. Her thumb was crooked, bent at an angle that suggested a long-ago break that had never set properly. "What is it?" the woman said. Her voice was like grinding stones. "My daughter," Il said. "She's burning with fever. I need willow bark. I need valerian. I need everything you have." The woman studied her face. She studied the lantern. She studied the road behind Ilse, the darkness, the hollow. She studied the way Ilse's hands were shaking, not from cold, but from fear. "Come in," the woman said. Ilse stepped inside. The cottage was warm. It smelled of dried herbs and wood smoke and something medicinal, sharp, and bitter. Shelves lined the walls, filled with jars and bottles and bundles of herbs hung from the rafters. A fire burned in the hearth, bright and steady. The woman closed the door and turned to Ilse. "Sit," she said. "Tell me everything." Ilse sat on a wooden stool by the fire. She told her. She told her about Alara, about the fever, about the rattling breath and the glassy eyes, and the question about dying. She told her about the road, about the stones, about the silence. She told her about Jaren, about Torvin, about the way the second stone had been shattered and the hum had frayed at the edges. The old woman listened. She did not interrupt. She did not offer comfort. When Ilse finished, she stood up. She walked to the shelves. She pulled down bundles and jars, laying them on the table in front of Ilse. Willow bark, valerian root, yarrow, chamomile, honey, a small vial of something dark and thick, laudanum, perhaps, or poppy milk. She wrapped them in cloth and tied them with twine. "This will buy time," she said. "It will not cure whatever is in her blood. Fever this high, this fast, it's not natural. Something is wrong, something deeper than a chill." "Can you come?" Ilse asked. "Can you see her?" "I will come," she said, "but I will not walk the road at night. I will wait here for you to bring her, or I will walk with you to the edge of the hollow and no further." She drew the door shut behind Ilse and turned the iron latch. "The dark out there, it does not take everyone." Ilse nodded, she understood. She tied the bundle to her waist with her belt. She stood up. "Thank you," she said. The old woman grunted. It was not quite gratitude, it was acknowledgement. "Go," she said, "before the night takes you." Ilse left the cottage. She walked back to the road. She walked back through the dark. The bundle of herbs was heavy against her hip. Her fingers were numb. Her toes were frozen. But she walked. She counted her steps. She listened to the hum of the stones. She felt the cold in her bones and the fever memory in her blood. The hollow was darker than she remembered. The wind was louder. The silence was deeper. She could feel it now, not just the hum of the stones, but the absence beneath it, the void that the stones held at bay. It was pressing against her from the north, a weight like water, a pressure like drowning. She quickened her pace. She reached the third waystone. She touched it. Cold, solid, patient. She touched the second, jagged, broken, its hum discordant and strained. She did not stop. She kept walking. The cottage appeared in the lantern light. The door was open. She could see Jaren's silhouette inside, kneeling by the fire. She could hear Alara's breathing shallow, rapid, rattling. Ilse pushed the door open. She stepped inside. She dropped the bundle on the table. She moved to the bed. She pressed the cool cloth to Alara's forehead. "Mama," Alara whispered. Her eyes were open. They were green. They were clear. "Did you find it?" "Yes," Ilse said. "I found it." She began to mix the tincture. She began to lift Alara's head. She began to do everything she knew how to do, with hands that shook and a heart that hammered and a love that was the only thing stronger than fear. The old woman entered behind her, carrying a small leather bag and a lantern of her own. She set them on the table. She looked at Alara. She looked at Ilse. "We will see," she said. The stones held firm, low and constant, though their edges frayed against the dark.